to you by Barfoot & Thompson.
On the show today, dare to retire free. Take off for a fun-filled, not time-filled retirement. Find out how here on Property Matters. Welcome along to another Monday. Thanks for tuning in. You've got another long weekend coming up in the clear. You can see it. It's happening. But then there's a massive gap till we get to October. So I hope you're planning to do something special over that weekend. And maybe it's about sitting down with a good book. And have I got a fabulous person on the show today. I'm absolutely delighted to welcome Kristen Sutherland, who is co-author of Dare to Retire Free. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Look, it's great to have you here, and it's really funny timing-wise because I turn the big 50 next year, and it's funny how all of a sudden you actually start thinking about retirement, and it suddenly entered my head. And I'm a very busy person, and that whole thought process around, you know, this next decade and a bit, we need to be starting to really think about that. And I have this vivid memory as a teenager of our fabulous high school principal who sadly passed away at his retirement party. He literally dropped dead at his retirement party. And that has always stayed in my head about needing to unwind slowly and sort of make that journey into retirement. So a quick squiz through your book, I can tell we're in for a really good conversation today. Now, first of all, though, tell us a little bit about your sort of career path, because there's lots and lots of things in your CV. You're a LinkedIn special.
That
certainly adds up to the credibility, I guess, of writing this book. So tell us a little bit about you.
Yes, I have a very varied past. I've been told at many interviews I'm very hard to put in a box, which I quite like because I don't like being in the box. But so I started out in health, actually. That was my passion when I left school. And so I went into radiography and did that for a number of years. Really enjoyed it. You know, great career to start, great career to travel with. You know, that's a passion of mine. So really enjoyed that. Enjoyed being in the health sector, but found it a little bit frustrating. So my first sort of diversion from there was trying to find out how I could make the health sector better, but not from within it, I realised. So then I actually studied, went on to do my MBA while I lived over in London to go into health services management. And then I came back to New Zealand actually with that qualification. Interesting experience trying to get a job in New Zealand. For those of those who haven't picked it already, I'm not, you know, originally from here, so I'm Australian. So arriving back into Christchurch, New Zealand, trying to get a job as an Australian was quite an experience for me. But anyway, managed to finally get there. I think it was 27 job interviews before someone decided that they would give me a chance. And then I went into that health services management for a number of years. Actually really enjoyed that, working in the Ministry of Health. Lovely actually experience to work within government so that you can experiencing the challenge that they face. Very easy to criticise from the outside. So, you know, had a great team that I worked with down in Christchurch in that. And then another pivot for me wasn't one I'd probably recommend people to do, was the Christchurch earthquakes happened. And at that time, like, the building actually that I worked in was no longer able to be used, so we were all working from home. And I just at that time wanted to feel like I could make a difference in what was going on in the environment. And I heard from it was another person that I'd actually worked with at the Ministry of Health that they were working for the Earthquake Commission. And I thought, wow, that, you know, that's something I could do to make a difference to help people here. I'd been through the experience myself. I had started my property investing journey at that point too, so we'd sort of gone into property investment, so I thought it would be quite a good mix. And at the time, actually, EQC was looking for people to be part of their assessment teams that could show the empathy side as well as the technical side. So they're actually pairing up builders with nurses, teachers, you know, people who had that experience, healthcare professionals in general as well, of being able to show empathy. Because, you know, we were seeing a group of people who were extremely stressed and, you know, upset about what had happened to their homes, to their lives, you know, all sorts of things. So I actually worked for a period as a loss adjuster at the Earthquake Commission, which I found quite, I guess, helpful for myself to go through that journey of going through the earthquakes that I was helping people. Then took a little bit of time off to have my second child. And then when I came, and I actually moved out of New Zealand for a few years because I got sick of earthquakes. So I wanted to take a little bit of time off. Went back to Australia for a little bit of time, but realised for me that the opportunities for career development and what I wanted to do, which was in property and other things, were in New Zealand. So said to my husband, who's a Kiwi, let's go back to New Zealand. I actually wanted to go back to Auckland, which he's a South Island boy, so he was not
he was struggling.
That excited about. But anyway, we managed to move back to Auckland and, you know, actually love living in Auckland. You know, it's a great city to raise family and things. And then when I got here, I wanted to use the skills I'd had previously but in a slightly different way. So I actually went into project management. So I'd done that in my property roles but hadn't officially done it. So I trained to become a project management professional, went into the University of Auckland, went back to some of my roots of healthcare. So I actually worked within the research arm in the university, managing a large project that actually looks at every cardiac event that happens in the country and measures what happens to the person and tries to improve outcomes for them. So it's a really, really interesting project. It's been running for a number of years called ANZACS. So I was project manager for that and then led a team of about 26 project managers for a period within the university. Again, I'm not great at staying in one place for too long. So after that, you know, I was sort of looking for what I was going to do next. And my passion has always been property, I think. You know, since I was quite young, I've been very passionate about that. So along the way, I've taken on roles in property, worked in... I really think networking is really important in anything you do. So I've always been a member of property investors associations. And at that time, I thought, well, I'll, you know, be really interested in getting on the board, which I did for a number of years, and then became president of Auckland Property Investors Association, which has been an amazing experience. And I'm still doing that at the moment. So I also wanted to help people in property. And I truly believe that can be quite life-changing for people just getting into that investment world, be it as a first home buyer or as an investor. So then I did some property coaching, like, and I loved that because that's helping people through that journey of, you know, they might not know anything about property or they might know quite a lot, but they don't know what the next step is. So did that and then realized the finance side interested me quite a lot as well. There's lots of things that interest me, but that was the one that I then turned to. And so I have started working as a financial advisor. And that, you know, I think that sort of rounds off my experience in careers. In amongst that was also a personal experience where I'm sure we'll go into it, but I started a business with my mum called Smart Retirement, which helps people plan for the health and wellbeing side of retirement. And that was sort of intertwined as I was doing all of those things. So
wow.
Varied.
Wow. I mean, that's a LinkedIn explosion.
Yes.
But I love it. But I love it. But I love sort of the draw in through property and through people, by the sounds of it, through as well. And some lovely moments there of obviously you've had roles that required some empathy, which is a nice sort of segue into to where this story's going. Now, you just mentioned your fabulous mum, Di Murphy. So you wrote this book together. Tell us a little bit about mum's journey.
Well, mum, like, you know, if people say who was your inspiration for, you know, what you do, it's definitely my mum. If you think mine's a LinkedIn explosion, you should see her career. You know, she certainly was quite a trailblazer, especially for the, you know, the era that she did it in. It wasn't common that women firstly went into careers and changed them, you know, and worked their way up the ladder. So, you know, she's had an amazing career ranging from being a local councillor in our hometown to marketing and then a marketing manager for Darling Harbour in Australia. So that was the biggest tourist attraction in Australia at the time. Then she went on to work at Ticketmaster. She's worked for the Children's Hospital Foundation in Australia, like just an amazing career. So she was certainly my inspiration to, you know, learn new things all the time.
And do lots of different things
too.
That's
it, and do lots of different things, which again was, it was really a trailblazing thing to do at that time.
Yeah, that's cool. So when did you decide, okay, let's have some mother and daughter time and sit down and write a book together? Because, you know, I could imagine that could have gone one of two ways. Obviously, it's gone in a positive way. What made you suddenly decide to do that?
Yeah, so quite a journey to get here, really. I'm sure every author says that. But in 2006, the story really started. That's where the book started. And that was when my dad decided to retire. So 42 years of law, decided, right, I'm going to retire, was really looking forward to it, did no planning whatsoever to get there because he was too busy. He was too busy working in the business, really common for professionals, business owners, people that are very attached to their careers, be that you're a nurse, a teacher, a professional of any sort, you know, very attached. So he, on the day, first day of retirement, you know, hung up the boots of law, spent the first morning out to lunch with mum. So they were out to lunch, having a lovely time, and he collapses and slides down slowly under the table, you know, and I think the thoughts mum said were going through her head are, you know, there's that classic of those people, like you mentioned, who on the first day of retirement dropped dead. So, you know, she had...
Their body just says, what? You stopped?
That's it, yeah. You stopped, you know. So he was rushed off to hospital and ambulance, spent many hours in there. My dad hates hospitals, like, you know, pure hate of them. So I decided he was going to discharge himself later that night. In the emergency room, nurse said to him, anything changed for you recently? And he said, yes, I retired yesterday. And she said, oh, you're the fifth one this week.
Wow.
This is quite a small hospital in Australia, and not a large town. Fifth one this week, two have walked out and three have gone out in body bags.
Right.
And, it, you know, that was a real
eye-opener. Did he then stay in?
No, he still left.
Oh,
he still
left.
But it was an eye-opener for him to then go home, and he said he spent the next few weeks sort of going, well, what caused this? And for him it was that he didn't feel needed anymore. You know, he... Mm. When he was a lawyer, someone needed you in court and someone needed to solve their dispute for them, and you were needed and people were contacting you all the time and it was busy, and he'd never thought about the day when that wasn't going to be the case.
Wow.
And it really impacted. And I think for so many people, you know, that journey from full on to nothing, if there's no planning that's gone on, is really hard. And we're attempting to do some research at the moment with the University of Auckland as well as to how many people do, you know, die from retirement. Because I know, having worked in medical research, that you don't code a death to retirement.
No.
You code it to a heart attack or a stroke or whatever the physical thing was, not the mental cause of what that was. So we don't really know how many other people has this happened to.
Mm.
Anecdotally, we know, you know, we hear it from the medical profession of how many people this happens to, and you hear it. You've experienced it. You hear it. I had a friend recently whose mum, same thing, first week of retirement died.
Wow.
From no physical reason.
No.
You know, so that was the journey that started us to firstly look at what was on offer just for our dad, like, you know, and Di's husband. What's on offer, what's out there? And there's just really not very much at all. Lots of stuff about the money, you know, you can plan that till the cows come home, but nothing about this health, psychological, well-being side. And so we started looking into it and going, well, you know, how can we help? Like, how can we help another family not go through the same thing that we went through, because it was pretty traumatic.
And Dad's okay now?
And Dad's
okay. He's doing all right?
Now, yes.
Excellent.
Third time retiring, he's done really well.
He needed to read the book three times.
He did.
So this was your first book? Writing together?
Yes.
Yeah, first book, full stop.
So first book, full stop.
Self-published.
Yeah.
You said you started the process in 2006.
Mm.
It is now 2024.
Yes.
So it's taken a little while.
Well, the book wasn't on the cards just the...
Okay, phew. Tell us a little bit about that. Before we unpack the book, what was the experience like having to write and self-publish? Did you learn a lot along the way?
Oh, my goodness. We learnt so much. You know, I do love when you come into something that you've never had any experience with previously and it opens up your eyes to a whole new world of, you know, what's going on. So that truly was what it was like for us. When we first started the journey, we were really trying to take the knowledge that we'd learned from, we offer online courses within the business, and we wanted that knowledge to be as a book, because there were people we would never reach with an online course. And especially in the demographic, you know, from 55 plus is really the area, you know, that we would like to target and people to start planning for retirement. So we thought, you know, we want to, you know, be able to get to that market. So we started learning about self-publishing a book. And actually at the time, I have a very entrepreneurial son. And so when we were doing the course, when we first started learning how to do this, I did it with my mum and my son. So very multi-generational learning that was going on. I made him pay for part of the course because I was like, well, if you're going to benefit from it, you'll pay for some of it. But he also then, while mum and I were sort of getting to grips with all the things we needed to do and the technology and everything like that, he published his first book within, I think it was about a month of us first doing the course.
Brilliant.
And he now has 12 books published on Amazon. They're all cookbooks because that's cool. His passion. But like, it was just such a reminder for us of the younger generation taking action. So it kicked us into action too, because we needed to keep up.
And would you do it again? Would you write another book?
Oh, that's a good question. I'll say no now. I think it might be like childbirth.
Yes,
you know, it's painful
for
me and I'll forget. But at the moment, no plans do.
All right. Well, let's unpack the book now, Dare to Retire Free. Tell us sort of a bit of an overview, and then what I'm keen to do is chat through the chapters and sort of get a quick sort of top tips from you. What I love looking in it is it's actually a practical book that people can complete questions, answer physically right in the book as they're planning as they go. So I love that. Give me the overview. What are you hoping to achieve?
We want people to walk away from having read the book with, at the bare minimum, an outline of what they want from retirement. So what is it they want out of retirement, and start to plan that. So we're hoping they'll do all the activities on the way through, but even if they do one or two of those, it gets them starting to think about what is it that I want for my retirement and starting to plan for it. So if they walk away with just the outline of a plan, that would be perfect.
Nice. Okay, so the outline, when we talk through your first chapters all around having purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me. So I guess I'm throwing at you to sort of either talk about the theory behind the chapter or a top tip based on the chapter for each one as we go through.
I think we started here because for us it was the most important topic, and for my dad it was the thing that, you know, caused him the most problem, was what was his purpose now that he wasn't a lawyer? And, you know, for anyone, what is your purpose now you're not attached to a profession or a job or whatever it is? Why are you here? What do you want to achieve? So getting people to think about what is it that gets me out of bed in the morning now? What, you know, what drives
me? It doesn't have to stop.
It doesn't have to stop. And it can, you know, it's meant to be exciting. We've written this hopefully in a way that it's a guidebook. It's meant to be a bit funny in parts. You know, it's meant to be a little bit light, but it's a very serious topic. But it's meant to just get you thinking. So to, you know, in the purpose chapter, we're like, what's your purpose? It doesn't have to be what it's been previously, or it might be, but we're going to develop it in a slightly different way. So what's going to get you out of bed in the morning and inspire you to, you know, keep going? Because we don't want people dropping dead on the first day of retirement. They've got so much knowledge and so much skills, and this is meant to be a really fulfilling, fun time of life, but we've got to know what we're aiming for to get there.
True. I love the second chapter around social network. And I think of my own parents, they were heavily involved in multiple groups, businesses, church groups, and they chose to move into a really large retirement village, and it was the best decision ever. And a lot of people, I think, in their world were like, oh, the retirement village is going to snap up all your money. It didn't matter. It wasn't about that. Actually, it was about going into a village of people.
Yes.
And all the activities, all the friendships, the neighbours, the security, the safety. And I look at them now in their 90s and think, you know, when that time comes, that one will pass. The other's got a friend next door, you know.
Yeah.
And whether it's that or other networks, what do you see as the importance when you're planning this?
I think it's about developing those networks if you haven't got them, or thinking about what you've got now and will that continue? Because the workmates might not be the playmates later.
Yeah.
So we've got to think and plan before this happens, like your parents going into the retirement home. Like, go in at a time, you know, just as an example, where you can develop those networks.
Yeah.
When you're not, you know, too, I guess, you know, not able to go out and do the things that are on offer, so developing them. Because we know that those social networks are the most important thing for our happiness. Mm. Like, that's what makes us happy. There's a brilliant study, and we talk about it in the book as well. It was the Harvard Study of Adult Development. It's still going on, and it's the longest running study in history, and it looks at what makes people happy. And they took a group of men who, it was men, of course, back in the day, we didn't have women in the study, but they took a group of men from Harvard. And then they took a group of men from a Boston school in the area that was very underprivileged school. So, you know, these kids were in really tough times. And they've measured them over their lifetimes and how happy they are. So these guys are now in their 80s and 90s. And the one thing that determines their level of happiness, apart from anything else, it's not money, you know, because you've got very privileged group and a very underprivileged group. It is the quality of their social networks.
Wow.
It's the quality of their friendships. Money has nothing to do with it. So, you know, to get people to think around what's your network now, how are you going to develop, how's it going to change? Because it will. We all like to think that everyone's going to remain friends after you leave work, but we know it doesn't happen.
No.
So start developing those networks, get into groups, you know, have a look at what societies are out there that you like, find something random and try it, you know, just see if you like it. You know, religious groups are a really big one for a lot of people. communal living, like whatever it is that you're going to try, start it before you retire so that those networks are in place to be your backstop if it doesn't go well.
Yeah, yeah. Love it. And makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So next chapter, use what you've got, your skills and your talents. So you don't need to put a stop on that.
No.
I guess you just got to watch your hours, your input, your energy, but continue to use those skills perhaps for somebody else and in good ways, you know.
Well, I think it's just saying to people, firstly, identify what your skills and talents are, because I think we go through our career and we don't necessarily really appreciate the things that we're developing and those skills and talents over time. And we may not realise how important they are to us. And then we come out the other end of a career and then we go into retirement and we don't appreciate that we can use those in different ways. So, you know, the example I use is those real A-type personalities that, you know, they need to be in charge and they've come out of a job that, you know, they're the boss and they go into retirement. You're not the boss. You're only the boss of you in retirement. But maybe find some things like go and chair a board. You know, there's so many boards out there that would love to have the skill set that you might have, or, you know, just try and utilise those skills. And if they're not, you know, your traditional business skills. I mean, we've got so many examples of people that there was a lady who, she was really good at painting nails, like, you know, so she went into the retirement homes and painted people's nails once a week because it gave so much back and it made her feel good because it was something she could do. So whatever your skills and talents are, identify them, use them, and use them to make you feel good, because that's the goal of it, right? We want to be happy in retirement, so use the skills and talents, but identify them first.
Nice segue into the next one, now that I have the time, which I guess is around using those talents and things in a way, and now that you do have some spare time.
So the time, and this is one people often don't think about at all. So on the first day of retirement, are you going to get up at the same time? Are you going to sleep in? You know, we have this honeymoon period of retirement where we might go, I'm going to sleep in, and, you know, and that might feel fun for a while. But actually, for some people, the structure they've had for those 40 years of working is really important, and they need to get up at the same time to continue that sense of who they are, that sense of worth and purpose. I'm doing something, I'm contributing, you know, be it to society or my family, or I'm volunteering, I'm doing something. But think around, how are you going to structure your day? What's it going to look like? Have a plan, because, you know, the first day of retirement, it can be quite scary if you don't have the plan of, I am going to get out of bed. What am I going to do with the rest of the day? Like, it sounds wonderful that you go, I'm going to play golf. And you're like, well, that's great. And that'll be exciting for the first few months. But after that, might not be quite so exciting because the honeymoon phase is over. And now we go into the reality of, this is the next 20 to 30 years of your life. So it, for some people, it might be they need a very structured plan. So what are the things you need to do each week? What are the, you know, the must-dos that I want to do? And then the, you know, the passions, and put those in. So you could write out a weekly plan, plan the hours, like see what that looks like with just the essentials, and then put the essentials that are now going to become the essential, which are actually your passions. So put those into the week so you do them, because we all know if we don't put them in, they don't get done. And try it. If that's too restrictive, you know, you could have a different philosophy of like 2 days I'm going to do for fun and 2 days are for jobs, because life still needs to happen. You still need to, you know, maintain your property or do the washing or do the shopping. All those things still need to happen. But how is it going to happen? How are you going to structure it? You know, so we've had so many different experiences come back to us from different people talking about one extreme works for them, one doesn't, but you've got to find what it is for you on a day-to-day basis and then a weekly basis and then a longer term, what is it I want to achieve in retirement, or what are the passions I want to do? Do I want to travel? Do I, you know, want to help the kids? Whatever it is, put that in. So maybe even a yearly plan where you plan out, okay, over the year, that month is going to be for, I'm going to go and visit a friend, I'm going to do this, but have that plan. So time is really important to think about. And we think, oh my goodness, we'll have all the time in the world, but we don't.
No. Your book then sort of takes a little bit of a turn at this point with the question, will I still love them? And thinking about the relationships that we have in our life and how that will change through retirement.
Yep. And it's a big area, like, it, you know, because we know that those relationships are the things that, you know, make us happy, or so we need to think about how do we think they might change, start to plan for it if we can. So there's so many levels to this, be it your personal relationship with a partner, you know, a flatmate or whatever, someone you're living with. How is that going to change from you being at home more often? Are they going to want you there? You know, it's not, because that just changes everything. I mean, when I was researching for our online course, I found this study and it identified a syndrome in Japan, like an actual syndrome, that's the retiring husband syndrome. And there is physical symptoms that women get from their husbands coming and retiring, because it's changed the whole dynamic of the relationship.
And I guess it depends when it happens. I mean, I've got a good friend, both were principals, and she retired a good 3 or 4 years before her husband. She was managing retirement. Wow, she loved it. Husband retired, and I think within 3 months, he was ordered off to go back to school, and just like, but what he did was use his talents and go and read in primary schools and read to kids and do things. But she needed him out of the house because she'd built this amazing world and he still wanted to be busy. He hadn't done the plan. He wasn't ready.
He wasn't ready. He didn't have the things he
but
was
he then
to
used
do.
His skills to go back in a different setting.
Excellent. Good. So he just needed to plan beforehand. Yeah. But that's all right. And that's the thing, is those changing relationships, not just with being a partner, but with your children or your grandchildren. You might have a great plan that you're actually going to help out the grandkids quite a lot. And that might not be your children's plan of what's going to happen. It might be quite different. It's like, well, you haven't helped for all these years, and nope, you're not coming in, or, you know, the kids are older and they don't actually want, you know, you to be around. Or having those conversations beforehand, really important. It's all the planning. So sit down with people, talk about what's it going to be like. Like, you know, if I'm home during the day and your partner, you know, used to get you dinner at night, or whatever it was, are you going to get me lunch? You know, or is that off the table? You know, or just those little conversations. Who's going to unpack the dishwasher? Because now neither of us are working. You know, it changes the dynamics of all relationships. Or if you're, you know, you've got really good group of friends that maybe you used to go and meet for coffee all the time, or go to restaurants with, and suddenly in retirement you don't have the same level of income you used to. Is that going to change that? Could you say to them, hey, could we meet in the park, you know, instead of meeting in a restaurant? Could we, you know, meet at home? But those conversations beforehand, because, you know, I find that people then get a bit embarrassed because they're like, well, I don't have the money I used to previously, so I can't do the things I used to. And that whole friendship circle can break down because we didn't think about that beforehand.
I've always joked with my kids. I said, you've got two options. I said, if you have young kids and you want granddad in a nice sleep out on your property that you provide, granddad will be your babysitter, no problem. But I, you know, expect a decent heat pump and a good sleep out. If you'd prefer granddad's nowhere to be seen, then Gold Coast apartment that overlooks the beach. I said, you choose.
That's it, your choice.
Your choice. All right, working for fun. We've kind of that similar, I guess, to using those skills and talents.
Yeah, that's it. And it's trying to think, for some people, actually, the you know, that end and it's hot and cold and you turn work off and suddenly there's nothing is too much. So thinking around, do I want to do it that way? Do I want to start going part-time? Is there something that I could do that would fit in with one of my passions and actually it wouldn't feel like work? You know, one of the examples we read about was a couple, they loved travel. So he actually got a job driving the bus for a airline. So, you know, he was just driving the bus for the airline and she worked in reception in a hotel. So like their travel expenses, because they worked for these companies, were really small, but it wasn't jobs that they couldn't come and go from.
Yeah.
So just trying to adapt and say, well, I'm going to do something that suits me. It might be that you go and do consulting work because you can do it on your terms. You might want to work part-time. You might want to do mentoring because, you know, that gives you another sense of purpose and worth to what you're doing. But it doesn't have to be you just turn it off and you can never go back. It's like, why don't you do something you really enjoy? That fits in with your passion, but that you don't have to be there.
Yeah.
If that doesn't
puts a little bit of money in the travel fund.
That's
and
right,
those
it
sorts
puts
of
money
things.
In the travel fund.
Yeah. Right sizing is the title of your next chapter.
Yes. So I know that like we always talk around downsizing when we get to this age, but actually that might not be the right thing. So for a lot of people, it's thinking around. So again, it's taking planning. I know I keep coming back to the plan, but what do I want? Like, do I want to be near family? Don't I? What do I want in the house? Do I want a room to do my arts? Do I want somewhere that I'm going to do my wood turning? What does it look like? Do I want family to be able to come and stay or friends to come and stay? And, you know, looking at the whole package and then trying to decide what the house needs to be like or where you need to be. And that might not be a smaller place. Like I know for a lot of people in retirement, they've actually got bigger places but different, like, you know, that have less maintenance but bigger so that they can have the family come and stay or they can have friends come and stay or whatever that looks like for them. So it's right sizing.
Is it about planning sometimes more than one stop in that journey? Like you might go, well, I'm fit and able and at 65, this is what I'm after to get the kids around, but I can see by 75 I want to move into this. So you don't have to have that one stop shop.
No, it's just I think planning for the first bit of retirement, because we know that what we will do at 65 and what we'll do at 75 or 85 is quite different. That's okay. The plan can change, but we just want to have it. We want to think around, do I need to be near medical facilities? Do I want to be near the sea? Is it the, you know, the hills that I want to be near? Do I want to be able to walk to get the paper or a coffee? What does that look like? And planning around that.
Okay, then the biggie. Money.
Well, that's what we say is not big.
I know.
It's not the big one. But I know
But it
that
is in your thoughts.
Yes,
you know, you look at your KiwiSaver, you look at, you know, and rules around if you've been overseas, etc. You know, there's quite a lot to retirement. And
there
it's
is.
Not just an instant, here's your pension, go well.
Yeah. No, that's right. And people do need to plan for them. I mean, we say, you know, it's not important. It is, of course, important. But our point on it is it doesn't make you happy or not. By the time you get to near retirement, if you haven't sorted the money, you probably not going to at that point. So then it's making a plan around, here's where we are. We are where we are. Let's make the plan for what this looks like. And you've got to think around, well, do I have enough to live the life I'm living now in retirement? If I don't, what do I need to change? What does that look like? You know, so maybe going and seeing a financial advisor to talk through, do I have enough? If I don't, make the adjustment sooner rather than later. There's no point burying your head in the sand saying, oh my God, I haven't got enough, I'm going to run out, and then actually running out. But, you know, think around that. And then also thinking around not just the money but the paperwork side of it. So do you have a will? There's an amazing percentage of people who don't. Do you have enduring powers of attorney, you know, that people can make decisions for you in really awkward times when they don't want to be fighting over who's making the decision? You've decided that. Things like passwords, and we were talking earlier about, you know, just saying, can people get into your account? It's like a really common problem that the partner or family can't get access to what they need to because they don't know the password. So are you going to write them down somewhere? Not recommended, I know, but, you know, are you going to have something?
Somewhere or someone.
Use a provider. There's some really good services out there that have all your passwords, and actually on your passing, they will send that on to someone else. So you can have that as your emergency contact. So all of those things, you know, they are very important, but they're not going to ultimately make you happy.
Nice. Living well, very important. Starting to think quite early around your own health so that I guess you're as fit and active as you can be and for as long as you can be.
Yeah, that's right. I think we all want to enjoy retirement being as healthy as we can. So we compare it in the book, you know, to being like a classic car, and we've just got to keep up the maintenance because we become a bit of a classic car at that point where things will go wrong, but we can maintain them and that will make us run smoother, you know, than we would have otherwise. So just really important to make sure you're getting your health checks. You are responsible for yourself. No one else is going to take responsibility for that. So making sure you go out and get those checks done, eating as healthily as you can, keeping up exercise, all the common things I know that people hark on about, but just a reminder that you're a classic car, you need maintaining.
Nice, beautiful. Now, why do you think it is that people fear the most about retirement that stops them doing this planning? Because everything you've said has made perfect sense. Why don't we do it?
I don't know why people don't do it because I'm a planner, so like I understand the need to do it. I think it's with anything, it's fear, and it might be fear of if we actually get into it, we're not sure what our sense of purpose is without being linked to our job. So it's the fear of the unknown. And for some people, and it was funny because the co-author of the book, Di, when I asked her, I don't know if you remember, we used to fill in those forms when we came into New Zealand, you had to say what your occupation was. And I said, you know, to Di, once she'd retired, what do you fill in on those? She goes, oh God, I don't write retired. Like there's a connotation around the word itself that retire means, you know, it comes from the original meaning of withdraw. And, you know, people don't want to be seen as doing that. So I think it's a fear of what other people think of you, a fear of what you might find out about yourself. And for some people it is worrying about, you know, how am I going to survive it if I haven't got the money? So all that tied in, again, leads back to let's bury our head in the sand and not do anything about it. But that certainly doesn't help because we know statistically if we do that, it's not going to go well.
No, and we're living longer.
Yes.
I mean, we're not planning a retirement that's, you know, 15, 20 years now. It can easily be 30 or more.
That's it. We're saying 30 years. And we say to people, you know, if you've got kids and you help plan their wedding, they spend longer planning their child's wedding than they do their own retirement. You know, if we're going to spend time on that, let's spend it on a 30-year time frame.
Absolutely. Now, tell us a little bit more about Smart Retirement, your business side of things.
So Smart Retirement was where it started, you know, when Mum and I started looking for what Dad could have gone out and found potentially if he was looking to make the plan. We just couldn't see anything in terms of that planning. So we actually sat around, it was in 2019, and I was actually having a very late midlife crisis and I'd gone away and done some life coaching, and we were sitting going, what are we going to do next? And we literally by the end of the week had come up with a plan for the business. So Smart Retirement was born and we've been, you know, doing online courses. So we wanted it to be very workshop based. So we were good to go in February 2020.
Brilliant.
And then COVID hit. So we had to pivot totally out of that and make it very online based. So that's like the goal of it's the same as the book, really. It's to help people plan for that health, well-being side and come up with their own plan of what they're going to do.
So when should somebody start thinking about their retirement? When do they sign up for your course, read your book, etc.?
We'd like to think 10 years before you're going to retire. So, you know,
I'm ahead then.
That's it. You're ahead of the game. Whenever you're, you know, thinking, well, this is my goal, and people have all different goals of when they're going to retire. But 10 years beforehand, starting to think about some of these questions. What networks do I need to develop?
Right.
Where am I going to live? What am I going to do with my day? You don't have to, you know, get the detail, obviously, at that point. But starting to think about that and position yourself and maybe develop some new hobbies that are going to be hobbies that you'll do in retirement. So I think 10 years would be our ideal. But we say, look, if you've retired and it's not going well, this still helps. You know, it's never too late, but we think about 10 years. So, you know, for most people, if that's 65 retirement, 55, let's start looking and planning and just having those initial thoughts around it.
And probably then also when things are being asked of you, you start making those choices. Actually, is this going to benefit me in my retirement, or is this going to tie me up now where I could be starting to build those social networks? So being a little bit of clever perhaps of what we keep and drop and change.
And how your relationships are developing, and, you know, with family, or what you're indicating to family of what you might want in retirement, and does that fit with what they might want in retirement? So all those conversations can start quite early.
Brilliant. I've only got a minute left on the clock, and I'm curious of that massive LinkedIn CV.
Yes.
What was the highlight moment?
Oh, my goodness. That's a very hard one. Look, I think for me, like, it's been a wonderful experience doing this business with family. So, you know, my dad inspired us. I'm working with my mum. We've written a book, you know. That's an exciting thing to do. That's definitely been a highlight for me.
That is awesome. That time, we've blinked and it's gone, and I always know a great guest when that happens. So thank you for coming on and sharing so much knowledge. Where can people get your book and find out more about Smart Retirement?
Yeah, so on our website, smartretirement.co.nz, you can purchase the book on there, or of course in all good bookstores you can get it as well.
Absolutely fantastic. Thank you, Kristen, for coming and chatting, and all the best to your mum and dad as well.
Thank you. Been a pleasure being here.
Awesome. We'll look forward to catching you again next week, same time each week. And remember, you can download past episodes on Spotify, Apple and Samsung Podcasts, iHeartRadio, YouTube, pretty much anywhere that you can track down a podcast. Have a fabulous rest of your week. We'll look forward to catching you next week. Take care.